for today is 2018-1241, Warner Chilcott v. Teva Pharmaceuticals. Mr. Kennedy, when you're ready, please proceed.
Just one second, Your Honor. May it please the Court, the District Court's non-infringement judgment is based on two reversible errors. The first error was a claim construction of the term gelling agent that deviated from the plain meaning in two respects without any basis to do so. The District Court acknowledged in its summary judgment opinion that gelling agent has a plain meaning, which it articulated as a substance that gels the film composition. But it then went on a sua sponte basis to impose a negative limitation excluding water from the ambit of gelling agent. There is no basis in the intrinsic evidence to do so, and the intrinsic evidence doesn't come close to meeting the high standard in cases such as Thorner and Omega for imposing a negative limitation.
Well, if the term gelling agent were given its plain and ordinary meaning, and if there is absolutely no evidence in this record that one of skill in the art would understand that plain and ordinary meaning to include water, then what's wrong with what the District Court did?
Well, there's two steps here. The plain and ordinary meaning of water is a substance capable of gelling the film composition. And we did put in evidence from our expert, Dr. Bodmeier, showing the role that water plays in the gelling in the accused product, the molecular interactions between HPMC.
But that's not the same thing as plain. You want the plain and ordinary meaning of the word, and your expert saying that in his view, water is contributing to the gelling in a particular disclosure isn't the same thing as evidence that the plain and ordinary meaning of gelling agent to a skilled artisan would include water.
Well, I think the plain and ordinary meaning of the term to a skilled artisan would be any substance that gels a film composition, or as we would put it, any substance capable of gelling the film composition. And then in the infringement analysis, we showed, based on prior art describing the well-known thermogelation process, that water does gel the film composition and that it plays a role. I think what happened here was the district...
What if, I believe the district court's construction was a substance that gels the composition or something like that?
Yeah, substance that gels the film. That was the first
composition. So why doesn't that mean you need a substance that is actually doing the gelling, not a substance that's getting out of the way to permit other things to gel?
Well, a couple things. First of all, I think the way...
So gelling agent, therefore, has an affirmative role in the gelling process. It doesn't have this kind of get out of the room so everybody else can do gelling.
Well, I'm not sure that's a fair characterization. That was the district court's characterization of how thermogelation works. I'm not sure that was the correct characterization. And certainly there's no expert testimony supporting the idea that APOSA would think that in a thermogelation process, water is getting out of the way. For example, HPMC is a powder. If it were just HPMC and heat, nothing would happen. So our position that our expert articulated based on the prior art and his own expertise is that water is playing a role.
What is that role? When you say it's playing a role, it feels just a little too vague for me. What is it that it's doing?
Well, as Dr. Bodmeier explains, the water creates a structure around the hydrophobic regions of the HPMC, like a cage. And then when heat is applied, the water becomes disordered, and that causes the gelation.
The cage breaks down.
Yes, essentially.
So then all the little particles can start binding together.
Essentially, yes. And
water doesn't also get bound in those particles, does it?
Not in the heated portion, I don't believe. It forms a cage. I don't think it gets bound. It forms a cage.
Water causes gelation to occur.
The disorder of the breakdown of the cage.
You said that no expert testified to the contrary, but Mr. Tonjo testified that water is not a gelling agent and that he had never heard of water being used as a gelling agent.
Okay, Mr. Tonjo is the inventor. He was not an expert.
That's not my question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
My question is, why shouldn't we, the court credited that testimony, why shouldn't we defer to the court's ruling on that?
For a couple of reasons. First of all, the court overread what Mr. Tonjo actually said. Mr. Tonjo is the inventor. He was deposed as a fact witness to talk about the work that he did in the commercial embodiment, Delzicol. And most of the questions Teva relies on expressly related to the commercial embodiment. In other words, he was asked, you know, what is the gelling agent in your product? And he's, you know, carrageenan is that gelling agent. There was really only one, maybe two questions that even arguably were outside the context of the commercial embodiment. For example, at Appendix 1272, page 234, he was asked if he had heard if water is a gelling agent, and he said no. But whether Mr. Tonjo had personally heard of water being used as a gelling agent doesn't address the question of what Aposa would have thought. Mr. Tonjo made capsules for a living. He typically used carrageenan, and that was the example in the patent. So the testimony in question doesn't say what Teva and the district court thought it said. It simply didn't speak to the issue here. The second point, which we raise in our briefs, is the legal point, cases such as Howmedica, where you have situations where the inventors have an idea what their claim scope is, which, as this court recognized in that opinion, may be different than what the claim scope actually is. And so courts do not typically fix claim scope based on inventor testimony. It's not clear that the judge even relied on that testimony. He said that intrinsic evidence alone decided that gelling agents should exclude water, but to the extent he did, it was clearly erroneous.
All right, so the district court holds that a gelling agent is a substance that gels film, and the magistrate does, and the district court adopts it, and then just said there's no evidence in this record that would prevent summary judgment about whether or not water can be a gelling agent. Is that right? Am I remembering the facts right?
Yes, magistrate Judge Payne's opinion, which the district judge adopted, had two holdings. It said you lose because there's a negative limitation excluding water, and then, you know, he recognized that there may be an issue with that mode of analysis because he had looked at the accused product. So he went back and had an alternative holding saying, even without the negative limitation, you lose because there's no genuine issue of material fact.
Okay. Well, you said that the issue of fact comes in, if I understand your argument right, from your expert who says that water contributes to gelling, right? Is that what, you know, if the gelling agent has to be a substance that gels the film composition, where is there evidence to prevent summary judgment in this case that water can meet that definition?
We did have the infringement expert, Dr. Bodmeier, whose declaration starts at Appendix 1278, and he relied on prior art discussing the thermogelation process, which is used in these capsules. And
that testimony in particular appears at page 1293, and in paragraph 35, what he actually says is, the term thermogelation refers to a well-known process by which water at elevated temperatures increases gelation. He doesn't say it is a substance that gels the film composition.
Okay, I see where
it increases gelation. So gelation is already theoretically occurring, right?
Okay, so I can explain the confusion here. This is an excerpt of an expert report that we submitted in declaration form. And the preliminary construction that the district court gave us was a substance that increases gelation. They gave us that construction at the Markman hearing in August 2016. We didn't get the final Markman order until almost a year later. And in that one, he changed the construction to a substance that gels the film composition. But in that order, he said he didn't consider it to be substantively different than this preliminary construction. So that's why Dr. Bodemeyer refers to increasing gelation. But the judge told us that those were that was the same thing as substance that gels the film composition. And this is discussed at, I think, 1254. That's the court's final Markman order. Or sorry, 1255. And so that's why the wording is different.
None of those references that Dr. Bodemeyer relies on describes water as a gelling agent, right?
They don't use the word, but they do describe it in terms of its role in the gelation process. It increases gelation. So, but that's correct. They don't use the word, they don't say water is a gelling agent in so many words. I'd like to point up an issue that the court's understanding of the term substance that gels the film composition creates. The gloss that it put on it in the summary judgment or summary judgment opinions is that it's not a gelling agent if the water plays a passive role versus an active role. That was what Judge Gilstrap said in affirming or denying our objections to the report and recommendation. But there's no intrinsic evidence and no expert testimony distinguishing between a gelling agent that plays an active role versus something that's not a gelling agent that plays a passive role. This is an example of judicial fact-finding and a claim construction that is not based on intrinsic evidence. The court's construction would also exclude preferred embodiments. For example,
but the real issue here was not what's the role of water in the gelation process. That's not the issue. The issue is whether water is a gelling agent. So whether it plays a passive or minor role is irrelevant.
Well, as we explained in our claim construction submissions, as with most substances in pharmaceutical formulations, you define the substance based on its role. For example, coloring agent, flavoring agent, gelling agent is no different. There are thousands of patents that use the term gelling agent. And so
this patent, the specification actually tells us what has a list of gelling agents.
It has a list of examples, but it also says you can...
Water is not one of them. I mean, and I would think that if water was a gelling agent, that would be at the top of this list.
I don't necessarily agree, Your Honor. I think the patent is indifferent to how you make the capsule. The focus of the patent, the invention here, was a custom HPMC grade that avoided certain problems in the prior art.
Again, I'm not referring to how the process is undertaken. The question is whether water is a gelling agent. And the specification lists gelling agents, and water is not one of them.
It is not listed as a gelling agent. It is not one of the examples. But I think
And in fact, water is discussed, like 28 times in the spec or something like that?
Discussed 21 times.
Never, ever in the context of it being a gelling agent.
That's correct. But I think this was another incorrect premise of the district court, is the district court thought that because it wasn't discussed, because it was mostly discussed as a solvent, saying water is a gelling agent would read out the gelling agent limitation. That's actually contrary to the record.
What about the example at the bottom of column 5? Where there's the balance of your composition is water, right? Which looks like it's about 80% water. It seems like you could have just said water, the gelling agent, and then the cellulose without mentioning carrageenan or whatever you call it. Carrageenan. Yeah, the so-called gelling agent.
Well,
it just said water.
That's correct.
I mean, there's 80% water in this composition, and none of it is playing the role of a gelling agent.
Well, I think, first of all, this is the intermediate solution, so it would be there's much less than 80% water in the final capsule. As with any gelling agent, the gelling agent is a residual component of the final hard capsule to which the claims are drawn. That's just as true of carrageenan as it is water. And I think Teva pointed out, well, you know, this is 80% water, but in the final capsule, it's closer to 5%, which is within the preferred range. So I don't know that this is really applicable, even aside from the fact that it's expressly an example. I don't think it's applicable to deciding whether something's a gelling agent. But this is a paradigmatic example of a patent that assumes that there will be background knowledge about what a gelling agent is and how to make capsules.
All right, Mr. Kennedy, we have almost exhausted all of your rebuttal time in addition to your regular time. So in order to reserve some rebuttal time, yeah, and I'll restore some, let's move on and have Mr. Rosendahl.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. The problem created by Allergan's claim construction here is that it does have the effect of reading gelling agent and gelling aid out of the claims. The record is clear that there are some capsules that contain gelling agents and gelling aids because they're made with an additive gelation process. And then there are other capsules that don't contain gelling agents or gelling aids because they're made with a thermal gelation process. And I do think it may be helpful just to get some context to be clear about the differences between the two kinds of processes. An additive gelling process is very much like making Jell-O at home in the refrigerator. One has a warm solution, one adds to it a gelling agent, and in the case of HPMC, one uses also a gelling aid to increase the effectiveness of the gelling agent, and then one cools down the solution, and the solution thickens and forms a gel. And then when that gel is dried into capsules, there will be residual gelling agents and gelling aids in those capsules. And indeed, the whole problem that the patent in suit is designed to solve arises uniquely in the context of additive gelling, because what can happen is that the gelling aid, which is an ion like potassium or calcium, when the capsule dries and is stored over time, can precipitate out and form either a cloudy appearance on the capsule or form spots on the capsule. And that's not a problem that arises in capsules made by thermogelation that don't have the gelling aid and the gelling agent in them. In thermogelation, instead of adding a gelling agent and cooling down the solution, one has a solution of just HPMC and water. One heats up the solution and takes advantage of the property of HPMC that it will form a gel on its own under the correct circumstances. I think that another error that we see here is that the argument made just now by Allergan was also the same argument made at the sort of the core of Dr. Bodmeier's expert opinion, and it was found at page 1296 of the joint appendix in paragraph 39. He says, in the water HPMC solution, the water HPMC solution increased the gelation of HPMC, and indeed in this context, water is instrumental to HPMC gelation because dry powder HPMC on its own will not form a gel. So their argument is, it's certainly true that you can't get a gel just by heating up HPMC powder. But the mere fact that water is a solvent in the system, the mere fact that molecules move around more in solution than they do in solid form, doesn't mean that water is a gelling agent. Because, of course, even in additive gelling, water is the solvent. You don't get a gel. If you take HPMC powder, you sprinkle it with carrageenan and potassium and heat it up or cool it off, you're also not going to get a gel. All of these solutions require water as a solvent, but the mere presence of water as a necessary condition for the reaction to go forward doesn't turn water into a gelling agent. In this regard, I think that the district court's fact-finding that, as a matter of fact, persons of skill in the art would not understand water to be a gelling agent is an important one, and one that cannot be overturned here unless the court were to find clear error, which the record would not support. Of particular interest, I think, Dr. McConville, who was Allergan's claim construction witness, said at his deposition that the 180 patent isn't about the thermal gelation of HPMC. The court will find that at appendix page 5521. The inventor of the patent in suit, Mr. Tanjo, said that in 47 years in the industry, he had never heard of anyone referring to water as a gelling agent. There's evidence from the manufacturer of the accused capsules, Capsugel, that the purpose of developing these capsules was to remove the gelling agent and gelling aid, that they were specifically made through a thermal gelling process in order not to have gelling agents and gelling aids present in them. And so the evidence is extremely strong, and indeed I think perhaps the most persuasive evidence is found in Allergan's own NDA, which was submitted to the FDA as part of this process of getting approval for its capsule formulation. The original proposed capsule was the one that is now being accused of infringement. And they then decided, when they made a decision to list this particular patent in the Orange Book, they changed the capsule from one that doesn't have a gelling agent and a gelling aid to one that does have a gelling agent and a gelling aid. And they told the FDA, and this can be found at appendix page 5437, it's also reproduced in our brief at pages 8 and 33, they told the FDA that the difference between what is now the accused capsule and the capsule that they are using is that theirs has a gelling agent and a gelling aid. They call it a gel processing aid. And that the accused capsule doesn't. So I think that there's overwhelming evidence in the record that the capsule that's at issue here doesn't have the gelling agent and the gelling aid that's that would be required for infringement. If the court has no further questions, I will yield the balance of my time.
Okay. You have 2 minutes.
Just very briefly, Your Honor, I think Mr. Rosendahl's presentation is an example of what the district court did here in blending the claim construction and infringement inquiries. Mr. Rosendahl talked almost entirely about extrinsic evidence as supporting his understanding of the claims, but there's no intrinsic evidence justifying any departure from the plain meaning, particularly when column 4 of the patent says that you can use any manufacturing process you want. Now, as for the extrinsic evidence that he cited, I already addressed the inventor testimony. The Delzicol NDA at 5437 is a regulatory filing. There's no reason in the record and no reason to think it attempted to catalog every possible use of every component. In fact, you know, water is identified as a processing aid. The district court in Teva's theory is that water is a solvent in this product. And if you look at point 2 on that page, 5437, it talks about using carrageenan as a gelling agent in the capsules to ensure rapid dissolution. It's not clear it's even using it in the same context as capsule manufacturing. Dr. McConville's testimony would be probative if this were a product by process claim or if he weren't talking. He said it wasn't about thermogelation, but he also said right after that on the same page that heated water can gel a film composition. And finally, it's not
surprising. What about the Sarkar article? The Sarkar article that mentions concerning thermogelation, but yet it doesn't say anything about water being a gelling agent.
That's correct. They don't identify water as a gelling agent, but the articles also don't say that HPMC gels itself. The articles disclose, and Dr. Bodmeier explains, that water is part of the process. And under the court's claim construction, at least without the negative limitation, being part of the gelation process should be enough to meet the claim limitation.
Quick question.
Sure.
Is the generic already on the market?
No. Teva's product has tentative approval.
Okay. I mean, I'm just wondering, is this litigation holding up the marketing of the generic?
I mean, there is a first filer, so there's that issue as well. But the court's non-infringement ruling should be vacated and remanded for further
proceedings. Did the district court consider Allergan's NDA in its decision?
I believe so. Well, actually, I'm not sure.
Okay.
Well, it really just said Dr. Bodmeier's opinions were conclusory, which clearly is not the case. It's a very different case than, for example, Novartis, where this court found conclusory an expert which had a computer model with no assumptions behind it. The fact finder may disagree with Dr. Bodmeier's analysis, but the basis for the analysis is all there, and it simply can't be disregarded on summary judgment.
Okay, thank both counsel. This case is taken under submission.